You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 103, iPhone, your wallet's gonna hurt edition. This week on the podcast, we got confirmation the Apple event is going to be on September 12th, which, of course, Apple will unveil their new iPhones. Michael has some insightful information about the names for those new iPhones, which are probably not what you might expect. We also talked about the new split status bar UI on the iPhone 8 and the new OLED touch strip at the bottom of the iPhone and how that functions. So stick around for that conversation. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
All right, so the event we've all been waiting for has been confirmed. The Apple keynote will take place on September 12th, starting at 10 a.m. in the Steve Jobs Theater at Apple Park. Their first ever event there.
Do we know how many people that theater seats?
1,000.
Is that about the same as the previous events?
No, smaller.
Smaller, okay.
But bigger than their previous venue at Infinite Loop.
Okay.
Which, by necessity, means the event will become more exclusive. Bill Graham Auditorium, where they have held the event in previous years, I think the last 2 years, actually, that seats about 2,500 or 3,000 or something like that. It's got multiple levels. This is just straight up arena seating from the stage all the way to the back, one level, nothing fancy.
Mm-hmm.
The interior, there were actually just some photos that were released of the interior today. Somebody posted photos on Google Maps for the theater. The interior is going for a natural wood motif. Most of it appears to be, I want to say birch, but I'm probably wrong. Like, it's definitely a lighter wood. It's not sequoia or something you'd expect them to use that's in California, or at least something in abundant supply in California. So the stage, the cladding on the sides of the stage, a lot of the detail between the rows of seating, the steps, it's all kind of covered in this light, honey-colored wood, which is in direct contrast, of course, to the outside of the theater, which has a carbon fiber roof, 100% glass walls all around, and is mostly made of concrete and steel otherwise.
So what are people expecting Apple to announce on September 12th?
Basically three things. The new iPhones, the 4K Apple TV, and Apple Watch Series 3 with LTE. So on the note of the iPhone, I was shown a very interesting photo the other day, which corroborates a lot of the reports recently that the notch would be visible on the new iPhone. So I was shown a photo, and it confirms that the status bar on the new phone, this was always the big question with people. It was like, well, where does the time go? The notch is in the middle where the time used to be. Simple answer, the time is now on the left. And on the right, we have cellular signal strength, Wi-Fi, and battery life.
And a shockingly absent carrier name.
Yes, though I have heard that the status bar will shift, whatever that means. So they might do a marquee thing, or it'll like rotate back and forth between the glyphs and the carrier name or something clever. I don't know.
I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter because you know what carrier you're on. But I guess if you're roaming, I mean, do you really need to know what carrier you're on? I guess it doesn't really matter as long as your internet works or it doesn't, right?
Yeah, and Apple can always change the glyph to show that you're roaming. So, I mean, Android's been doing this for years. Android hasn't shown the carrier name for a while because they've got way too many icons up there.
And of course, from a design perspective, I mean, Apple would prefer not to have the carrier name, ruining the symmetry or the design of the status bar, because it's kind of like, well, they'd rather not have somebody else's brand on there, I think. But I think it really boils down to just cleanliness and minimalism.
Yeah. And I mean, they've probably been looking for an excuse to get rid of the carrier name for a while. And this is it. It's basically, we don't have enough room to display this. Oops. So yeah, in the end, we're going to get a cleaner status bar. I think also subtextually, it's kind of reducing the carrier to just a provider of cellular signal, because now you're not, like you said, you're not advertising the carrier. You're just showing you're connected or you're not connected, and that's it. So it kind of fulfills that purpose as well. So yeah, it's unclear exactly if the notch will always be visible. I think moving forward, their intent would probably be to put those sensors behind the screen. There are multiple patents, as we've discussed in the past, where they talk about being able to place cameras and sensors behind an OLED display. So my assumption is, as soon as they're able to do that at scale, there won't be a notch anymore, and the entire front of the phone will just be a single screen. But until then, this is what they've come up with, and I think it looks rather unique.
So the leaked shot that I took a look at of the notched screen there, the split status bar, whatever you want to call it, it wasn't a very high quality photo. But one of the things that I was curious about was, like, where is the front-facing camera? You told me, well, it's not a very good quality photo, which is fine. But I'm almost wondering, going back to what we talked about on a previous episode a long time ago about liquid metal and the fact that maybe one day we would have a phone where the camera lens would be, like, invisible. It would just be behind the... it would be behind the glass and you wouldn't see it. Do you think there's a possibility that there might be something like this? Maybe that'll be one of the surprises when they release it.
Like I said, that's down the road. And
so we're not there yet.
Like liquid metal, I have no idea at this point if it's going to be in the phone or not. I honestly don't know.
So I'm just reading into this too much. This is just a poor quality photo.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Basically, the dummy models are pretty much spot on. Like the stuff Benjamin Geskin has been posting, it's pretty close to being accurate. So, you know, just look at those and you have a pretty good idea of what we're going to be getting. Plus, obviously, the details about this. The other information that I have is that the phone will be entirely gesture driven for multitasking and things. So the home indicator, the new home button, will not actually be a button. It will essentially be a thin bar at the bottom of the screen. And to access multitasking when you're in an app, it'll be like the iPad. You simply swipe up from the bottom. That will bring up the multitasking. So you can flick through all the apps or swipe right to go to control center. Then you can continue swiping from the bottom and that takes you home. I've also heard there may be 3D touch shortcuts for that as well. So you'll kind be able of to like, press on the bar and that'll do different things.
That would be cool. So this is kind of like the OLED strip on the MacBooks, that sort of idea?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the interaction would be different. But.
Yeah, like there won't be a bunch of contextual buttons. It's just going to be this line, and I think that'll make the operating system feel a lot more fluid than it already does, because the apps will start to feel more like cards.
I've seen people make this analogy to WebOS. They're going back to it.
Yeah. And I mean, this was kind of the first notion I had when we started talking about this a year ago, that with this screen where you have all of this space and it's running to the edges, the apps kind of become these windows into content, and you want to be able to just quickly dismiss them, throw them around. And the notion of this home indicator bar, I think it really plays to that idea. And obviously, it's just version one, so it might not be as dramatic as we might hope, but certainly they'll continue to iterate on it in iOS 12 next year.
How is this design different than, say, the on-screen buttons on Android, many Android phones that they've had for years, which, of course, a lot of iPhone users always made fun of that, you know, it's just not as good as having a physical button, because also the implementation could be different from one OEM handset to another. It's never consistent. Now, obviously, Apple has that advantage that they have the consistency thing, because they can make all their phones, every iPhone would have the exact same strip. It would have the same interaction. I get that. But why go with this design? Is it just because they have no other choice, because they want to increase the size of the display without increasing the actual physical aspect of the phone that much?
So, I mean, it's a lot of factors. It's that, it's wanting to display as much content as possible. Because that's the thing with Android. They display that bar of the home button, the back button, and whatever the third button is, all the time. Like, it's always there. It's always taking up space, except for a few very rare cases, like if you have the camera open or you're watching a video. But even then, it's like three little dots, and the minute you tap near there, it becomes visible. So by switching to this user experience, I think Apple is trying to make it easy for people to use, but also maximize the available space for content. So if you've used iPad on iOS 11, you know that quite a lot of interaction is to be gained from swiping from the bottom. So that brings up the dock on the iPad. It can also essentially minimize the app and bring up control center and multitasking. Sound familiar? Like, I think when they were working on this phone, they were also looking at the iPad, and a lot of those ideas cross-pollinated. So I think a lot of what you're seeing on iPad is actually going to make its way to this new iPhone.
Yeah.
Where apps suddenly become these contextual windows, cards, and you're really just swiping between them.
Yeah.
And it's
a natural evolution, really, of the design.
Yeah. It becomes less and less about constantly having to go back to the home screen and then into another app and then back to the home screen, or double tapping. Like, with this new software bar, it becomes a much more fluid interaction. Like, instead of pressing this button multiple times, you're suddenly just doing this elegant single swipe from the bottom, and that's bringing up all of your apps.
Speaking of which, just as a quick aside there, because I noticed you have iOS 11 on your phone, and you've had it for a while on your 7 Plus, but how close are we to the gold master release of iOS 11? We in the sort of the last final?
I'd say we're there. We're at beta 9, and all indications seem to suggest that they're focusing on Buddy, which is the internal code name for the setup assistant. So that's the app that runs when you start up your iPhone for the first time.
Yeah, I saw a passing reference to someone on Twitter made comment that that was the latest change in the newest beta, was the setup assistant stuff. So just the polish, fit and finish on
exactly
the last couple of betas.
And I think they're really focusing on Buddy, because that is where all of the "this is how the new phone works" things will be, including setting up Face ID.
Yeah.
So they're going to want to get that right the first time.
Now, are we going to get an iOS final release before the release of the actual new iPhone? I can't remember how that works.
Yes, it's usually the Tuesday before the Friday that the phones come out.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So in this case,
so by the time the event is on, we'll have the final. They'll be, yeah, they'll say go and install it.
So what usually happens is after the event, the Gold Master is released, and then it's released to the public the week after, before the phones come out. So the phones come out on the 22nd, which then means that the final build of iOS 11 will be made available to everybody else on September 19th. Obviously, that's not 100%, but that's how it has worked in the past. So we can probably expect a similar timeline, plus or minus 1 or 2 days.
I think it would be really helpful to maybe some of the listeners, because this is something certainly I've been wondering, but is there a way that somebody could check and see what apps they have on their phone that are not 64-bit that would be that would not work before they upgraded? Because I know for a fact I do have at least a couple. There might be even more, and I'm really worried about losing some certain utilities that I have.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way to check currently. I do know that iOS 10 does warn you about compatibility
when you first install.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you first open an app that's 32-bit, it does warn you. Obviously, in iOS 11, if you try to open that app, it will just say no.
Here we go. Actually, here's the answer. Go into settings, go into general, and then go into about. You have to dig through.
Oh, okay.
And then click on, in the menu, click on apps, applications. And it'll show you which apps are not compatible. And it says at the top, these apps may slow your iPhone and will not work with iOS 11 if they are not updated. If no update is available, contact the app developer for more information. So right now, it only shows one app that I have on my phone that is not compatible. So
all
it's
right.
not
well, that's
terrible,
not
but
too
that,
bad.
That is the one app I don't want to lose. But
well.
It hasn't been updated since 2012, I think.
Yeah, so it's probably not going to be.
Although, I emailed the developer and he never got back to me.
A surprising number of apps have been updated, including a lot of beloved games like Ridiculous Fishing. Those have all been updated to 64-bit, which is kind of impressive considering they haven't been updated in years. But yeah, I mean, that's another thing to keep in mind, obviously. The 32-bit app apocalypse is coming. The minute iOS 11 is installed on 70 to 80% of devices, goodbye 32-bit. Forever. And that transition is not slowing down. It's coming to macOS next. They're going to start warning you in 10.14 next year and presumably 10.15 in 2019 will block 32-bit applications altogether. So they're giving people plenty of warning, but it is coming and they're not slowing down for anything. Which is great, because that means moving forward, any Apple product will be immune to the year 2038 problem, which is the new Y2K bug.
So it's interesting, because we haven't really talked about High Sierra, but as you know, I'm several OSs behind, quite a few actually, three, I guess, because I'm still on Yosemite. So there's El Capitan after that, and then Sierra after that.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to be three operating systems behind. But now that Sierra has stabilized, I thought, well, I could upgrade to that, but I almost feel like waiting even longer now, because High Sierra, just by the name alone, tells me that it's mostly a maintenance and bug fix release. That might be the real one to upgrade to.
But they have also upgraded some key frameworks, which is going to cause problems with apps. So Metal is now Metal 2. Their entire graphics pipeline has changed.
Really?
So any
interesting to see. I care more about, for me at least, my own interests are Core Audio.
Yeah. Core Audio is probably fine.
Core Audio is actually been quite a stable API.
I don't think they've done anything to Core Audio. Maybe some minor stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe some new codecs. Because one of the big things which brings it into alignment with iOS 11 is they've added HEVC and HEIF support. So the new high resolution video and image formats that they've added. And then for any more recent Mac product, they come with hardware decoding for those formats, which is nice.
So even though maybe not necessarily some crazy big updates to Core Audio, it's just it's one of those things that, you know, approach with caution.
Yeah.
And check compatibility into whatever specialized applications you have, because you never know
and
what's going to break.
And as we both are aware, Pro Audio apps update.
Oh, it's the worst.
So it's slow.
Except for Logic, maybe, which gets an update.
Well, yeah, because that's Apple, right?
But even the thing with Pro Audio is that many of us that are audio engineers that work with plugins, because most people don't use the stock plugins necessarily or don't solely rely on stock plugins, you have to make sure that not only the application itself is compatible, but the plugins you've installed are compatible. Most of the time they're fine, because all pretty much plugins that now that you use these days are all 64-bit. They have been for a while, even in Pro Tools. And Pro Tools has been a 64-bit app for a while. Logic's 64-bit as well. But you never know what kind of quirks, bugs will arise because of certain whatever under-the-hood changes they've made.
Yeah. The other big change, obviously, is shifting to the Apple file system, APFS. It apparently is now mandatory for SSD systems. So if you're on a laptop that has an SSD, it will automatically transition you to APFS, primarily because APFS is designed for flash storage.
Yeah.
So right out of the gate, you'll get a lot of optimization out of that. The only problem with that is it's a new file format. So a lot of apps that do weird things with the file system, like maybe Dropbox, for example. Like anything that's not using macOS's default file system framework, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, especially for Pro Tools too, I have no idea how their app is written.
Yeah.
So who knows how it will behave, but I guarantee you there won't be compatibility for High Sierra when Pro Tools Tools for a while. Probably
there,
for
there might
several
be a
months.
Distinction there, though. I could see them releasing compatibility for High Sierra without APFS sooner,
because
the APFS compatibility will probably take longer if they're doing anything custom with the file system.
So APFS is not mandatory?
It's only mandatory if your computer has an SSD. There is...
Which mine does for the boot drive. But it's not a factory Apple drive, so I don't know if that makes a difference.
Yeah.
Because I even have to enable trim manually. This is a question, highly technical question.
I'm not entirely sure what it would do then.
Yeah. We may need to revisit this.
Yeah, it might give you the option. It might not. I'm not 100%. Apple did just release a support page about APFS.
I'll look into it. If I find anything, I can always throw a link in the show notes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's somewhere on one of my Slack channels. Yeah. I can find it. But yeah.
So any other thoughts as we just wrap here going into the iPhone event that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the other piece of news is the names for the phones. Case manufacturers, high-end case manufacturers, have updated their SKUs, and it reveals something very surprising. Are you ready? The names for the new phones are not 7S, 7S Plus, and 8. They are 8, 8 Plus, and iPhone Edition.
What the hell is the iPhone Edition?
That's the iPhone 8. The OLED phone.
That's the OLED one.
Yeah.
So no Pro.
It's not Pro. So that is very telling to me because...
Of the price, because it's going to be the most expensive one. They're preparing people mentally. Expect that to be a hell of an expensive
phone. Oh, yes. I am fully expecting to pay upwards of $1,300 in Canada for one. But that's fine. I'll do it anyways, I guess. Yeah, so this tells us several things. One, because it's not Pro, that means it is not intended as a permanent fixture in the product line. This is likely a one-off phone. And I believe the marketing will be, as I suspected or hypothesized in the previous episode where we talked about the pricing, they will present this phone, the iPhone edition, as next year's iPhone today. The iPhone 8 and 8 Plus are the new iPhones for this year, but we wanted to do something special. So here is next year's iPhone right now. Costs more, but you're getting the cutting edge of technology. You're getting a glimpse at the design for the iPhone moving forward. You're getting all these extra features.
So setting it up for next year being slightly cheaper, meaning like you can buy it now at the higher price because we wanted to do it for the anniversary of the iPhone or whatever.
They might use the anniversary.
I mean, they might not say it, but
yeah. Like, that's really what this is. And that way they can kind of save face with, well, the 8 and the 8 Plus are great phones. They have wireless charging. They have the A11 chip. They have Bluetooth 5, whatever else is in there. And then we went several extra miles ahead and are delivering the iPhone edition to you as well. So then people who buy the 8 and 8 Plus are kind of primed to not be as disappointed because it's like, well, these are the phones that we would have shipped this year regardless. Like, those are the phones that they would have shipped if they were just going iteratively, right? But the addition is basically, okay, we went further. We're showing you what 2018's phone looks like. Don't feel bad that you can't afford it. You will be able to next year when it is the new iPhone for that year. Like that.
So for this year, us peasants will settle for the not iPhone edition phone.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the marketing directive here where it's like, okay, the 8 and the 8 Plus, those are the phones that are for 2017. The edition is 2018's iPhone. We're just giving it to you a little early. So then next year, exactly 1 year from now, the iPhone 8S and possibly 8S Plus are going to look like the edition. OLED display, no more home button, Face ID, AR sensors, front and back, all of that stuff will be in there at scale. Especially because next year, all of their OLED suppliers are becoming fully operational. Yeah. Japan Display, Sharp running out of Foxconn, Innolux, they're all going to be making OLED for Apple next year.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be upgrading this year. I'll probably have to wait till next year. Just because it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And I finally paid off my phone and it's unlocked.
Yeah.
6S Plus. It doesn't magically make, you know, although it may make you feel that way, it doesn't magically make your phone like, you know, ready for the garbage heap.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's still a working phone.
It is definitely an urge that sits deep within your soul. I mean,
yes.
But
like all of us that are crazy obsessed with upgrading. I mean, it's like, it's endless. It never ends, right?
Of course.
For me, my other obsession is audio gear. I'm always upgrading. How do I improve the... There's always something to improve, right? But it doesn't make what you have terrible.
No, of course not. I mean, obviously, there is a factor where eventually it won't work anymore. That's just the way things are these days.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm giving you a warning to not step into this studio with an iPhone 8. You are not welcome here.
You mean iPhone edition?
Or iPhone edition. Do not...
iPhone 8 is the normal one.
Because once I see that thing, I know my phone will feel like garbage.
Yeah, I just walk in. I'm like, oh, it's this. The whole screen. The whole front is a screen. It's so cool. It's great. Oh, hey, Alex. I didn't see you there with your normal old phone. It'll be fine. I mean, there's tons of phones that look like that now. The Galaxy S8, the S8 Plus, the Note 8, the LG G6. It's the latest craze, but not the Pixel 2. Oh, they missed out bad. So yeah, iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and iPhone Edition, also known as iPhone Your Wallet's Gonna Hurt Edition.
You've been listening to the Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.